Okay, good morning everyone.
Good morning.
Welcome back. So we're the second week of the new topic, vulnerability, the good and the bad. Just to begin, as we always do, with a review. Last week we spoke about the topic of vulnerability in a very sort of general way. And as we're going to do today, we're sort of basing it a little bit on the works of Brené Brown, who's one of the experts on the topic of vulnerability. And we talked about how she began studying the concept of shame, which is a barrier to connection, to relationships, which is such an integral part of the human experience and critical to human function and happiness. As we talked about last week, we find this in the Chumash right at the beginning. Latov heyota adam levado, it's not good for a person to be alone, and so on. So we explain that to overcome, to have connection, one has to overcome shame, which means to fight the idea of perfection, which means we have to have the courage to be imperfect, as we talked about, which requires the ability to acknowledge and embrace our own imperfections and vulnerabilities, and so on. And even sometimes, when appropriate, to share them with others as a connection, as a form of support, as a form of courage, as a form of being authentic. Now, we just made last week just a few points about vulnerability. Number one, that we need to acknowledge the fact that we're not perfect, and that courage to do that comes from the basic idea of not defining ourselves by our weaknesses and imperfections, but rather by the inner core essence of who we are, that fifth layer of the soul, that purity, that worthiness that we all have and we all maintain. We also talked about the idea that in Judaism, of course, a very important part of our human experience is values which lie at the core of who we are. But nevertheless, when we don't always implement them, they are important and they remain and we try to live by them. But when we don't always implement them properly, we don't define ourselves by that failure, but rather by the intrinsic worthiness of who we are. We talked about badly applied vulnerability. Vulnerability can be very powerful. To be vulnerable with others can be extremely powerful, but it needs to be for the purpose of growth, for the purpose of strength, for the purpose of connection, and not for the purpose of being needy and not for the purpose of being a victim. That's really, really important. And finally, we talked about that embracing vulnerability doesn't only mean embracing our own vulnerability, but also means making it easier for others to be vulnerable, which means acceptance not only of our own weaknesses, but acceptance of others and their weaknesses, being non-judgmental, embracing the insecurities, the weaknesses, the vulnerabilities of others as well. Okay. So what I want to do today is look at some concepts coming out of two chapters of Brené Brown's book, The Gift of Imperfection. We'll look at the introduction, first of all, and then part of the next chapter, which is called Courage, Compassion, and Connection. Those are three very important topics. So, in her introduction, she talks about a concept, which is an important concept, called wholehearted living, because in her lecture, she talks about showing up wholeheartedly, showing up completely, right? Now, I'll just read to you some of that, what she writes. It's very, very powerful. And then sort of unpack it a bit. So she says, wholehearted living is about engaging in our lives from a place of worthiness, right? It means cultivating the courage, the compassion, and the connection to wake up in the morning and think, no matter what gets done and how much is left undone, I am enough. Which means that I'm worthy, I'm enough. It's going to bed at night thinking, yes, I'm imperfect and vulnerable and sometimes afraid, but that doesn't change the truth that I'm also brave and worthy of love and belonging, right? So in other words, the connection, it's along with the whole theme that we started last week, that connection with others means connection with the whole of me, being authentic and the whole of me being worthy of being accepted, the whole of me being worthy of connecting, the whole of me being worthy of being loved. Now, she says a very important thing. She says wholehearted living is not a one-time choice, right? It's a process. In fact, I believe it's the journey of a lifetime. My goal is to bring awareness and clarity to the constellation of choices that lead to wholeheartedness, and to share what I've learned from many, many people who have dedicated themselves to living and loving with their whole hearts. Before embarking on any journey, including this one, it's important to talk about what we need to bring along. What does it take to live and love from a place of worthiness? How do we embrace imperfection? How do we cultivate what we need to let go of, the things that are holding us back? The answers to all of these questions are courage, compassion, and connection. Right? This is a big thing. Courage, compassion, and connection. The tools we need to work our way through our journey. Okay. Let's just unpack that a little bit. So wholehearted living is actually an important thing. We know that we are created on many layers. We've talked about this so many times. Our consciousness is made up of understanding, cognition, our emotion, our feeling, and our behavior, our functionality, right? Known in Hebrew as moach, lev, and kaved. And we find in Jewish literature, in Jewish writings, in all contexts, whether it's the context of friendship or connection or serving God for that matter, connection with God, right? We find the idea of wholehearted living. So one of the examples of this is, and I say this because I think I mentioned this last week, right? The Judaism looks at serving God not just as being a robotic, compliant human being, but it also means having a relationship. So whatever we learn about relationships with people that are healthy, in a different way, the same applies to our relationship with God, really, right? So we find it, and vice versa. The way we relate to God is the way we learn to relate with others as well. It goes together. So we have a very famous verse that we all say in the Shema, right? Where the Shema tells us, "Ve'ahavta at Hashem alakecha," you shall love God, your God, "b'chol levavcha," with all your heart, "b'chol nafshecha," with all your soul, "b'chol modecha," with all your might, resources, whatever the case is. So just there, before even we analyze that sentence, it's wholehearted living. In other words, God says, I don't want you to just be there or connect to me on the level of action, right? So I'll give you an example of what I mean. Very often we show up to an experience, but only part of us shows up, right? Have you ever told a teenager to clean up their room, for example, right? So even if they do it because they're compliant or they're scared of you, the whole of them is not doing it. The hands are doing it. The action is doing that, right? They someplace else. They can't see the point. They don't see why it's important to be clean and tidy and have no idea what you're on about and think you're crazy and lost the plot, but they'll do it because, you know, you're the boss, right? If you can get them to do it. But even if they do it, it's just only a very, very small part of them is actually there. You can't say they're doing it, right? The hands are doing it. They're not doing it. The head is somewhere else. The heart is somewhere else. I'm just giving you an example. I mean, and the same thing with us. We do lots of things. It could be spiritual things, godly things, human things, whatever the case is. A lot of times we do things. Now, there are things in life that we actually do it like that. I mean, we pay our bills that way. I'm not sure our whole heart is in paying the bills, right? Pay our taxes that way. We get things done that we don't want to do, but have, you know, necessary evils, like things that have to get done in the home. And that's okay. I mean, that's fine. I mean, mindful living really suggests that we sort of put ourselves more into every experience, but okay. But when we do things that are meaningful and connecting to others or connecting to God, it's not enough just to do things. It's not enough just to be there partially. Because we know from human relationships, when we're there partially, we ruin the relationship. Right? We need to be there completely. We need to show up completely. And showing completely means with all of us, even the weak parts, right? And that's really what God means when he says, "B'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol modecha." I want you to serve me, I want you to love me, but I want you to be there completely. I want you to show up completely with all your heart, all your soul, all your might, all your resource, everything. Every part of you needs to be. Which is why in Judaism, for example, we have such an emphasis. That's interesting. We have this interesting discussion just on a side note, right? What is more important, the action or the intention? Yeah. So on the one hand, people will tell you that, correctly so, that Judaism is a religion of action, which it is. Mitzvot are very action-based. So it doesn't matter what your intention is. You need to get a mezuzah up on the door, whether you feel like it or not, or whether you understand it or not, whatever, it doesn't make a difference. You put a mezuzah on the door, it's a mitzvah. Eat matzah on Pesach, doesn't taste very good, you're not enjoying it, but it's a mitzvah, right? Because on one hand, that is true. Every mitzvah creates a connection between us and God, and brings an energy of holiness into the world, and it's all true. So therefore, we place tremendous emphasis on action. Doing a mitzvah, staying away from things that aren't good, doing things that are good, and so on. And, oh gosh, I hope. Oh no, it's okay. I thought there was a problem with the Zoom, but I think it's okay. But at the same time, what happens often is that we forget that we need to put feeling into it. We forget we need to have what's called in Hebrew kavana, feeling, intention, understanding, right? To the stage that the sages tell us, which often we forget, they say that a mitzvah belo kavana, if you do a mitzvah but you don't have the kavana, you don't have the intention behind it, it's like a body without a soul. It's like you're doing it, it's robotic, but it's like missing soul, right? Which is a problem. Why? Because we've got to show up completely. So I'm just saying, we find this idea in a very sort of godly sense. But I want to, and the same is true with relationship with other people. If we want to have deep relationships, we need to be wholehearted about it. We need to show up completely. Not just mechanically, but with heart, with intention, with thinking, and so on. But I want to just draw, the reason I brought that pasuk in, that verse in, with how we relate to God, is because it has a very interesting nuance in that verse, which is very important to this topic of how we relate to God and how we relate to other people. And I think I have mentioned this before, but there's a very interesting extra letter in one of the words that show us an amazing amount of stuff. The verse tells us, "Ve'ahavta Hashem Elokecha," you should love Hashem your God, "b'chol levavcha." What does "b'chol levavcha" mean? With all your heart. But actually, if you know a bit of Hebrew, that's not how you say "with all your heart." There's an extra letter there. Right? In Hebrew, lev is heart. Heart is lev. Your heart is libcha. Right? Or libecha, whatever exactly the conjugation is. Three letters. Yerotem, that's correct? Yeah. Levavcha has an extra bet in it. Levavcha. It's got the letter bet twice. Right? Why? So, the sages tell us in the Talmud that the reason that there's a twice the letter bet is God says, "I want you to love me bishnei yitzarecha," with both your souls, with both your inclinations. Meaning, don't only love me with the good part, don't only connect me with the good part, the thought of you that's strong. I want you to bring along everything. Like we know, we've talked about that we all have two souls. We have the godly soul and the animal soul. Says God, "I want you to love me with the whole of you, because if you leave part of you behind, then you haven't shown up completely." Now, what does that mean? Obviously, ultimately, it means that we have to bring the whole of us along with the journey. But it's not so simple, because part of us is very not on the same page. Part of us is drawn towards materialism, hedonism, self-serving interests, pursuit of pleasure. Part of us is definitely not godly, as we know, right? And yet it says, "V'ahavtat Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha." Come to me with both your hearts. Part of you is not perfect. That's okay. I'll take the whole of you. You'll work on it, but the whole of you. All right. So here we have an interesting source, an interesting sort of idea coming from our relationship with God that talks about being there wholeheartedly, being there completely. In fact, that's one of the ideas of the Omer, the time of the Omer that we're in now. We've talked about this once before. In Judaism, the time of the Omer is a time of self-reflection and personal development. Why? So I don't know if you know this, but the Omer, everyone knows about the Omer, right? Do you know what the word Omer means? It's an interesting word. Sorry?
Offering?
It comes from an offering.
Say.
No, so that's with the Aleph. Omer is actually spelled with an ayin. Omer is a measurement. It's a biblical measurement. It's a measurement of barley, that's what it is. Because the way that, I'm just sharing with you a bit of general knowledge, but the Omer is called the Omer because we have Sfirat Omer, we count the days of the Omer, right? Why is it called counting the Omer? Because what happened was that when God gave us the Torah, he commanded us with the following idea, that on Pesach we commemorate the going out of Egypt, right? And then on the second night we start counting the Omer, but the way it works is, it begins with a flower sacrifice, a flower offering in temple times. So in temple times, on the second day of Pesach, they would bring this flower offering made out of barley, specifically barley, which I'll explain in a minute, right? And then they would count 49 days, And the amount of barley you had to bring was an omer of barley. That's why it's called the omer. Right? Just now, what's the significance of this barley they had to bring? So it's interesting that when the Jews left Egypt, right, they were spiritually very immature. They were not advanced at all. And therefore, the Kabbalists tell us that when the Jews left Egypt, when God revealed Himself and schlepped the Jews out of Egypt to give them freedom and also spiritual freedom, they didn't show up wholeheartedly because they couldn't. In other words, the only part that really schlepped them was their soul, their godly soul, not the animal soul. The animal soul was very unrefined. The animal soul would have remained in spiritual slavery. But the soul was ignited. The godly soul was so on fire that God was able to take us out of Egypt. That's what the Kabbalists teach us. But God says that in 49 days, I'm going to give you the Torah, and I'm going to have a full relationship with you. The giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai, which we celebrate on Shavuot, was the marriage between God and the Jewish people. So God says, I'm not only going to connect to your godly soul, I want to connect the whole of you. I need you to show up completely. So I'm going to give you 49 days to work on your animal soul. That's why it starts with the sacrifice of barley, because the Talmud tells us, it's not so much, today it's a bit different, because today, you know, we all eat beans and legumes and grass, and who knows what we all eat. But because we're very health conscious, but the Talmud actually, it says wheat is the grains of humans, barley is the grains of animals. Did you know that? Next time you eat a good cholent, have that in mind. But right, so that's what it says. That's called ma'achal behema. That's why all flour offerings in the temple were normally wheat, but the one that was bought the second day of Pesach was barley, representing the animal part of who we are, because that's what we got to bring along. We got to show up with it, right? So that's this wholehearted showing up, wholehearted living, so to speak, brought out in this concept. Now the same is true, as we know, the same is true with relationships. As we mentioned many, many times in Pirkei Avot, in the Ethics of the Fathers, it says, "Ukanei lecha chaver," you have to acquire for yourself a friend. Now what does it mean, acquire for yourself a friend? It means you have to work hard, you have to invest in a friend. But as we mentioned many times, the word chaver is singular. So what's Pirkei Avot telling us? You should acquire for yourself a friend, a single friend, that's enough. Right? But yes, we know that a real friend is not a lot of friends. Why? Because what's the definition of a friend? The definition of a friend is someone who with which we can show up wholeheartedly. And we can share everything to that friend with us without being judged, without being taken advantage of, without being accused, without being criticized, right? We can do it. We can open up. We can confide in. We can be fully connected to. That's a friend. So we have many, many friends. We have social friends, people we drink tea with and coffee and all kinds of things, right? But a real friend is someone we can connect to wholeheartedly. That's a really important part of relationships. I'm just bringing out how we find this in ancient writings, how important this is, right? This is true with leadership also. It's true with a true leader, someone who can connect to the people that they lead, and the people they lead can connect to them, but completely. I wanted to share with you, just to bring this out a little bit, and it's got to do with friendships also, right? I want to just share with you an article that I read of different anecdotes, different stories with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who was obviously a famous leader and people connected to. Because in Hasidic tradition, there was this concept, or this is this concept of a relationship between a Hasid and a Rebbe, right? A Rebbe is not just a teacher, it's a leader, it's a mentor, and so on. And one of the foundations that I always learned in yeshiva, that a Rebbe is someone who you can open up to. You can come with, you should say, a Rebbe is someone you can come to him with all your shmutz, you can come to him with everything. Because he'll help you, he'll inspire you, he'll educate you, he'll guide you, but he won't judge you, right? So I read a couple of interesting stories I'm going to share with you, because it's related to this topic of making it easy for people to be wholehearted. Because as we said last week, to be vulnerable and to show up wholeheartedly is a two-way street. It's about having the strength and the courage to do that. Part of that, as we'll soon see, is about accepting ourselves with all our weaknesses. But it's also about the other person making it possible to do that, right? It's a two-way concept. So first of all, there's a thing here about friends. So it starts with the story that there was a young person in many, many years ago in the central Chabad yeshiva who had a mental health crisis and became suicidal. And he started to vocalize those feelings. You know, in those days, mental health wasn't exactly, there wasn't such an awareness. So his fellow yeshiva students were a bit scared. They didn't know what to do with him. I mean, nowadays, someone expresses suicidal thoughts, you get them help. But proper help, professional help. But anyway, they said, you know what, at least before you do anything, you've got to tell the Rebbe what you have in mind. So he booked a private audience with the Rebbe, and he did just that. He started telling the Rebbe exactly his plans and where he's up to and where he is. And the Rebbe listened, and as the Rebbe was listening, tears started to come down his face. And after a few minutes, the student was watching the Rebbe cry, didn't wait for the Rebbe's response, and just ran out of the room. He went to his friends, and they said, "No, what happened?" He said, "No, I've changed my mind." So they said, what did the Rebbe tell you? What was the magic? He said, "Didn't tell me anything." "So why did you change your mind?" He said, "If I would have only known that there exists a person who cares for me so deeply, I would never have contemplated it." Right? In other words, that's a friend, that's a real connection. Because this connects to the story that I really want to tell you, is like this. There was a person who went into the Rebbe and said to the Rebbe, "What's your job? Like, what's your job description? What do you do? Like, how come so many people come to you? Like, what's, you know, what do you do? Are you a teacher? Are you a mentor? Like, what do you do?" So the Rebbe responded and said, "I try to be a friend." So the guy says, "A friend? That's all you do? That's it? Like, friend?" So, unfazed, the Rebbe responded with his own question. He said to him, "How many friends do you have?" So the guy said, I have many friends. So the Rebbe said to him, "Let me define a friend for you, and then I'm going to ask you the same question again." And he said, "A friend is someone in whose presence you can think aloud without worrying about being taken advantage of. A friend is someone who suffers with you and when you are in pain and rejoices in your joy. A friend is someone who looks out for you and always has your best interests in mind. In fact, a true friend is like an extension of yourself." And then he says to him, "So how many friends do you have?" And he didn't answer. What's fascinating is that the first leader that the Jewish people had, which is Moshe Rabbeinu, we always know him as Moses, right? But I don't know if you know this, he had many names. Because when he was born, his father gave him a name, his mother gave him a name, and in fact, that's not the name we use. I don't know if you know this, the name we use is the name that Pharaoh's daughter gave him when she found him in the river, right? And she called him Moshe, because it's an extra fascinating thing. Again, some general knowledge. The word Moshe actually means to draw out. It comes from an Egyptian word, apparently. And that's what the Torah tells us. That's what Pharaoh's daughter knew. And she drew him out of the water, so she called him Moshe, which is the name that we use. But he had many other names. One of the names he was given was Chaver, which means friend, right? Because that's what, even though he was a great leader and he was head and shoulders above everyone else, but he was a chaver, he was a true friend. He batted for the Jewish people, he argued for the Jewish people, he advocated for the Jewish people towards God and so on and so forth. So that's the concept, real connection. Because obviously, that two-way street of showing up wholeheartedly and being able to open up and bring all your imperfections and share them with other people requires a response. It requires the other person to have real empathy and to feel that connection. That's a two-way thing, right? We're going to talk about that two-way thing a little bit later, but of course, first of all, we need to know how to do it ourselves, and then we need to do it with the right people who will respond that way. Just on that relationship, because I'm just in the same article, it's a famous story, but I'll just share with you. The fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, when he was a child, he had a brother. His name was Rabbi Shalom Dovber, and he had a brother called Zalman Aaron. And they were very young children. The one was 4 and the one was 5. His brother, he became the Rebbe afterwards, but his brother was older than him. He was 5 at the time. And they're playing games. So, kids play, they act out things. They use their imagination, not so much today because most kids are on their screens today, but in the olden days when they actually could think and be imaginary and cultivate their exploration abilities, they used to do that, right? So, one day these two kids said, "Let's play a game." So, what did they decide to play? I mean, that was the house they grew in. They said, "Let's play a game called Chassid and Rebbe." Right? One of us will be the Rebbe, the other one will be the Chassid. So they decided who's going to be the Rebbe, who's going to be the Chassid. So it was decided that Zalman Aaron, he was the older one, so he'll be the Rebbe. And Shalom Dober would be the chassid. Okay? So Reb Zalman Aaron sat down at a table, and he was a five-year-old kid. He's going to be the Rebbe, and he's taking an audience of this young child. And his brother approaches him like a chassid approaches the Rebbe and says, "Yes, how can I help you?" So he says, "Look, I've got some weaknesses, and I really have problems in serving Hashem, or I need issues, and I want you to help me. And I want to know how to correct it." So he gave him an answer. He told him what to do. So his little brother said to him, "Ach, you're not a Rebbe." That was a spanner in the works of the game. So his older brother got a bit offended, I guess. He says to him, why am I not a Rebbe? He said, "Because if you were a real Rebbe," he said, "when I told you my problem, before you answered me, you would have given a krechts, you would have sighed. You would have shown that you feel for me. You're not a real Rebbe." So that's like a concept of empathy. Okay, so this is the concept of the courage to be wholehearted, to show up completely in everything that we do, including our relationships. But it goes together with the person we're relating to, making it, facilitating it that it's possible. Now, before we go on, I want to just comment on one word that you used. I read out before, which talked about being wholehearted, right? Because being wholehearted means, if we're going to have the courage to be wholehearted and to show up completely and to be vulnerable, it means being able to embrace our vulnerabilities, our weaknesses, our insecurities, and to share them with others and to show up completely. But that takes courage, right? And the courage is, first and foremost, as she points out, to accept ourselves. We have to accept ourselves wholeheartedly, right? Not to pretend part of us doesn't exist, not to want to hide part of us. We all have strengths, we all have weaknesses, we all have vulnerabilities, and we have to have the strength to accept it. Which is the point she makes, but I want to comment on just one little nuance which I disagree with. She says it means cultivating the courage, compassion, and connection to wake up in the morning and think, no matter what gets done and how much is left undone, I am enough. I don't like the word "I'm enough," right? Because I don't think that's necessary to be accepting of oneself. And this is a real important thing to talk about because it's very fundamental to Jewish thinking, particularly, and I think a lot of personal growth literature would agree, although in very more recent and modern times, sometimes we don't find it. Accepting oneself doesn't mean to say "I'm enough," right? It might mean maybe "I'm enough for now," or I think the better way of putting it is that no matter what gets done or what doesn't get done, or no matter how successful I am or not successful, not that I'm enough, but I'm still worthy. That's a big difference. Or I'm okay. Right? There's a huge difference between those two things. And I think the word matters, right? Why? Because as we said last week, fundamental to Jewish thinking, for sure, but the truth is in many, many, many forms of modern-day literature, like Carol Dweck's growth mindset and so on and so forth, growth is very, very important. And in Judaism, spiritual growth is very important. And spiritual growth takes effort, right? So one of the ways that these things get muddled up, as I mentioned last week, where sometimes it can be badly applied if we don't clarify, if we don't point it out, is that two things can be true at the same time. Which, by the way, is a concept that the modern world has a very difficult time handling, two truths at one time. That's why everything's extreme today. Extreme right, extreme left, extreme crazy, extreme normal. Right? You've things work together. I can accept and embrace my insecurities. I can accept, embrace my weaknesses, my failures, everything, because I know it doesn't define me, and I know I'm still worthy. And at the same time, but because of that, I can still really challenge myself. So if I wake up in the morning, hopefully my thinking should be, no matter what I was yesterday, or no matter even what I'm going to be today, I'm still worthy. And I still have what to do, and I still have a mission. I wouldn't say I'm still enough, because I'm not enough. Because the worst thing that can happen to a person is that the way I was yesterday is fine for today, and it's fine for tomorrow. It's not. It's not fine for tomorrow. It's not fine for today. I have to be better today than yesterday. I have to try at least. If I say, what's limiting?
Enough.
Right. Enough is very limiting. That's what I'm saying. And not only it's not good, it's Like we have a principle in the Talmud, for example, based on a verse in Tanakh, Adam la'amal yivaleh, the person was born to work hard. Right? Now it's not a contradiction to self-acceptance, although sometimes it's taken that way, and that's very dangerous. That concept of, it's like I said last week, that thing I read which I found bizarre, to say that before you can be vulnerable in a relationship, you have to accept your own vulnerabilities, which means accepting yourself and your needs. I don't think that's right. Because some of my needs are not good. I might have certain needs now, but I have to work on them. I have to work on becoming less needy, and I have to work on some of my needs that maybe are not, I mean, just because I really love chocolate ice cream, it doesn't mean that that's a fundamental need of mine, which I have to learn to accept, and so do you and my wife and everyone else just has to accept that. No, it's actually a bad thing. Once in a while, that's okay on Shabbat for dessert, but eat chocolate ice cream every day is actually very bad for me, right? So I'm not going to accept that need. And we live in a society today where often everything we want becomes a need. Big difference between a want and a need, right? We talked about this once. So I think, yes, self-acceptance is critically important. But self-acceptance comes because I accept that intrinsically I'm worthy. I'm not defined by any weakness, by any failure, by any shortcoming. I accept myself wholeheartedly, completely, the whole of myself. And I know that my weaknesses are part of me, so I've got to accept it and bring it along. But I'm also going to take responsibility for it. So I wouldn't say, and I'm going to work hard for it, and I'm going to push myself, I'm going to challenge myself. And I'm going to inspire and challenge others maybe even in an inappropriate way without being judgmental, not of others and not of myself. So yes, the first step to vulnerability is self-acceptance, but not that I'm enough, but that I'm okay and I'm worthy. And because I'm worthy, I'm going to keep moving. Very, very a subtle difference, but a very, very important point. So she writes the following. So let's talk about the courage part of it, right? Because it is courageous. It is easier to hide and to hide our weaknesses away, not to show them, not to even acknowledge them ourselves or not to accept them ourselves. And by the way, most people are very self-critical. And I say self-critical in ways which is bizarre. Either we're very, very hard with ourselves, as many people are, or we become self-accepting, but not in a courageous way. Like, that's just me. I'm not changing, and that's finished. That's who I am, or it's not so bad, or it's fine, and all my weaknesses are fine. Actually, my weaknesses are not fine, but it doesn't matter. I can accept it anyway, right? So to really accept ourselves properly, to acknowledge our vulnerabilities, to acknowledge our weaknesses, and yet to accept them and show up wholeheartedly actually does take courage. Especially to accept them and then to share them. Because most people like to present as perfect or partly perfect, right? So she says, if you're thinking, great, well, that's ridiculous. If it requires courage, I just need to be a superhero, right? To fight perfectionism. She says, I understand courage, compassion, and connection seem like big lofty ideas. But in reality, they are daily practices when exercised enough become these incredible gifts in our lives. All the good news is that our vulnerabilities are what force us to call upon these amazing tools. In other words, courage is something we don't have, but courage is something we have to practice, right? And this is part of what we're going to learn together, because sometimes it takes the other way around. It takes not that I accept myself and therefore I have the courage to sort of share my vulnerabilities with others and create real connection with others and real friendships and real relationships. Sometimes we just have to do it. We just have to actually do it. Even though we're very scared. Because doing it creates practice. Practice creates the emotion. As we know, that our emotions are very much shaped and guided and inspired by the way we behave. And therefore we need to use that courage. Now, when we talk about that concept of courage, she has an interesting little chapter, part of the chapter, the next chapter, where she talks about digging deep. See, digging deep. Because, again, to go back to what we started with, embracing our vulnerabilities means that we embrace and we do dig deep. We go very deep. We go deep to the core essence of who we are and what defines us. So in order to have that courage, we have to really connect to our depth. We have to really connect to who we are so that we feel okay and safe to share and to be vulnerable and yet to still feel worthy, right? So she talks about this concept of digging deep. Or what does digging deep mean? And she writes like this. She says, in early 2008, when my blog was still pretty low, I wrote a post about my breaking my dig deep button. Why? Because digging deep means different for other people, for some people, right? So what you used to understand as digging deep was the dig deep button is a secret level of pushing through when we're exhausted and overwhelmed, when there's too much to do and too little time for self-care, right? So sometimes digging deep, what some people think digging deep means, just to be hard on yourself and keep pushing yourself, which doesn't always work, right? So she says that it worked for a while. So I decided to stop doing that, she says. And that worked for a while, but I missed my dig deep button. I missed having something to turn to when I was depleted and down. I needed a tool to help me dig my way out. So here's what I found, she says. I found that people who live wholeheartedly, they do dig deep, but they do it in a different way. Okay, so she has a nice little acronym which she says that dig deep. Dig means being deliberate in their thoughts and behaviors through prayer, meditation, or simply setting their intentions. Inspired to make different choices, and going to make choices, going to do things. Okay. So she says that she started to dig deep, and she gives an example, which I want to just touch on, right? She says, I tried the new dig deep. She says what happened was that she was working, and she was just, she says like this, she says, I'm missing a piece, give me 1 second here. Oh yeah, she's like this. Since I made the discovery, I've been digging deep the new way. It's been pretty amazing. One example happened, and I want to just use this example for a discussion. Recently, when I was lost in the internet fog, rather than working, I was just lulling myself into a haze by mindlessly playing on Facebook and surfing the net and so on. It was neither relaxing nor productive, right? Is that familiar to anyone? Sometimes we like can't do any work, so we do silly things. We're actually not relaxing either. So we're actually just becoming frustrated because we're not getting things done. We're not actually feeling relaxed because we're just doing empty, mindless things and it's not working, right? It was just a giant time, energy, and energy suck, right? So I tried the new dig deep. I told myself, if you need to refuel and losing yourself online is relaxing, then do it. If not, do something deliberately relaxing. So I was saying you have to sort of focus and do something that's a decision to do, right? Find something inspiring to do rather than something soul-sucking. So I closed my laptop, said a little prayer to remind myself to be self-compassionate, and watched a movie on Netflix that I've been dying to see. It's exactly what I needed. It wasn't the old dig deep to push through. I didn't force myself to start working or to do something productive, but I intentionally and thoughtfully did something restorative, as she puts it, right? That's a very interesting story because, again, here, we always have to understand the balance, right? So part of accepting our whole self is connected to self-care because we understand our limitations, we understand our weaknesses, and we accept them and we bring them into the equation. Part of that is what they talk about today, self-care, that we need to know that we're not infinite, that we're not superhuman, that we're not perfect. And therefore, sometimes we have to slow down and sometimes we have to know our limitations. We have to accept them and we have to take care of ourselves. All true. As Stephen Covey calls it, sharpen the sword, right? However, putting that together again, just with value-based living, it can be dangerous. I know people are now have like, it's like their one mitzvah that they keep like zealously self-care, right? And everything becomes about self-care. And self-care can very quickly land up in being self-absorbed. There's a very big difference between self-care and self-absorbed, right? And sometimes people are very self-absorbed in the name of self-care. I've got to create boundaries and I can't do this activity and I can't help other people because I'm really busy taking care of myself. Taking care of myself is a means to an end. It's not an end in itself, right? It's understanding our limitations. We should understand limitations. It is very bad for people who do things because they think they need to be perfect and then end up harming themselves. So self-care is important. Self-care is, according to Brené Brown, and correctly so, part of accepting ourselves, part of accepting all of ourselves, part of understanding our own weaknesses at the time. Like what I'm capable of doing in a week might not be what I'm capable of doing now, and I have to accept that, and I have to bring that into the equation. We just have to be careful, however, that it's done in the right context. Because sometimes what that means is we become self-absorbed rather than self-care. Self-care means I want to be selfless, but in order to be selfless, and I want to live a life of meaning and purpose, and I want to accomplish, and I do want to help others, and I want to be kind to others, but part of that requires that there's an I here. And if the I isn't taken care of, then I dissolve into something useless, right? So we should be very careful, like all of these things, to embrace this, but not to experience what I always call the pendulum syndrome, which is taking stuff from one extreme to another. And you have sometimes, I've seen people do this, where I came to the conclusion I wasn't taking care of myself enough, so I'm going to take care of myself, and now it's just complete self-care and self being self-absorbed, right? So we have to be very careful. Because sometimes we do have to push ourselves, and we have to know the balance. And sometimes we have to say, you know, let's get down to it. Come on, I can do better than this, and that's okay. And it doesn't mean we're not accepting ourselves. We are, but we're also pushing ourselves. Because that's what growth is about. Growth is accepting ourselves, but also pushing ourselves. Okay. So that's our introductory sort of chapter. I want to just touch a little bit on the first part of the next chapter, which is now breaking all of this down, and we're going to do that over the next few weeks, and talking about courage. So this concept of accepting ourselves, understanding our weaknesses, and then sharing it with others as a means of connection is critically important, right? But as I said before, we need to know it's a two-way street. It's about accepting ourselves and being comfortable with our own vulnerabilities, but also connecting to the right people. Like I said last week, you know, being vulnerable doesn't mean sharing your weaknesses and your vulnerabilities with everyone all the time. Because sometimes, actually, it's very destructive. And she outlines this in this process very, very beautifully. And this is the last part I want to cover today. She tells a whole story, which I'm not going to go into great detail, but it's a long story. But essentially, she was invited to a school to talk. Now, she's a good speaker. She's really good. She connects to the crowd. She knows how to talk to a crowd and so on. There was a whole background. It was a school that was having politics and the parents and the school, and then there was a whole business, right? She was oblivious to all of this, and she got invited to the school by the school board or the school administration under false pretenses without knowing what the issues were, right? And the whole thing was done deceitfully. The parents didn't know what they were coming to. She didn't know what she was coming to. The board made the shidduch, so to speak, and she had to talk. She didn't even know what the topic was exactly, but she was given one topic. Really, they meant something else. Anyway, the bottom line is, it was a total disaster, right? She describes great detail. If you read the book, it's really funny, actually, right? She started talking, and she didn't connect. There were people sitting in the parents sitting in the front row. They were like making sounds and being like fetching and crackling and who knows what, right? And just it was a total mess. I mean, you know what it's like. Some of you, maybe your teachers, would know what a bad lesson is like, right? It's really bad, right? So she tried to talk louder. She tried to get more animated. It was a total and absolute flop. So she gets in her car, and she was just a mess, a complete mess, right? And she knew at that time, which is a true thing, right? That she needs to share this with someone, right? It will lighten the load. This is what it is. And this goes back to the verse in Proverbs that King Solomon says, sometimes, da'aga belev ish, a worry in the heart of man, yashchena, share it with someone, right? It also means, as I've explained many times, the word means it has two meanings. Share it with someone or remove it. And the two go together. Sometimes how we remove it is by sharing it with someone. Because we share it with someone, we create a connection. We feel supported. We feel stronger. It's two people on one problem. We feel a lot lighter, and we feel a lot easier to deal with it. Sometimes that's just what we need to do. We need to be able to share it. But for someone, this is a perfect example of courage, right? For someone who's a renowned speaker, speaking all over the country, to pick up a phone and to share with someone how a public address that was supposed to go really well was a total disaster is hard. Because a lot of us, when we're good at something, we like to maintain that persona of being good at it all the time. That's part of perfectionism, part of the disease of perfectionism, right? So she says to herself, practice courage and reach out. I'm using the story because it's true with every time we confide, every time we share something vulnerable with someone else. She says, we have to own our story and share it with someone who has earned the right to hear it. Someone who we can count on to respond with compassion. We need courage, compassion, and connection as soon as possible, right? So that's how we embrace our vulnerabilities. We need to have the courage to share it, but have the courage to share it in a space where there'll be compassion and empathy, which will build that connection, and connection is always strengthening. So she says the following. Here's the tricky part about compassion and connection. We can't just call anyone. It's not that simple. I have a lot of good friends, but there are only a handful of people who I can count on to practice compassion when I'm in the dark shame place. Right? So here's the thing. Today, vulnerability is becoming a buzzword, and people think that vulnerability means, as I said last week, that everything that's bothering you, you got to share publicly on social media or with 100 friends or anyone you meet. You know this kind of people? You ever met someone that you meet them and you don't even know them, but in 5 minutes, you know the entire life story? Right? That's not a strength. That's like a victim person or a person that just doesn't know what they're doing. Right? It's not going to help them. It's not going to create a connection. It's nothing. Sharing someone means courage. You have to have the courage to accept yourself, not to define yourself by your mess up, not to define yourself by your weakness, but also you need to be able to share it in the space where it's safe, where there will be compassion and it will be connection. And she says, if we share it with the wrong person, then it becomes much more dangerous, right? What she does is, she goes to a list of people. Excuse me. Who you shouldn't share it with, okay? You shouldn't share these kind of things with the type of person, I feel sorry for you. The person who responds with sympathy rather than empathy, right? There's a big difference between sympathy and empathy. Sympathy is a good thing too, but it's not as good as empathy, right? Empathy means I get it, I feel you, or I've been there, and you feel a connection. You feel a person actually feeling what you're feeling, right? Sympathy has a subtext, she says. The subtext of the response is, these things don't happen to me or people like me. Oh, you poor thing. Like, you know, I really feel sorry for you. But like, that's the kind of thing that happens to you, not to me, kind of thing, right? So you got to be very careful, right? That's not going to be helpful. Or people who will judge. You know, there are lots of things we can't share with them. Even if we accept ourselves fully, in the correct way, in the appropriate way, as I described, but none of us want to be judged. So the person hears the story and actually feels shame for you. Like, ooh, it must have been terrible. Like, how did you manage to do that? Like, what mistake did you make, right? Or don't feel the person who's going to show disappointment. The person needs you to be a pillar of worthiness and authenticity. They're too disappointed in your imperfections. You kind of let them down. Like, that's terrible. Like, you know. The blame, right? Like, what were you thinking? Like, why did you do that? You know? The comparing person. You never want to share these things with people who say, oh, you think that's bad? Let me tell you, like, let me tell you what happened to me last week, right? That's like really terrible. Right? By the way, that's also true, you know, with parenting and teaching young children. Like, sometimes kids come to us with a tragedy. And like, you're thinking, like, are you normal? Like, that's nothing. But it's not nothing. It's their world, right? So if I have enough courage to pluck up the courage to accept myself my wholeheartedly and I share it with a friend to get connection, to get compassion, what I get is, that's garnished. That's nothing. You know, I'll tell you what real disappointment is or real shame is, right? That's not the person you want to be, right? Also, advice giving. I can fix it and I can fix you, right? You know how sometimes you share it with someone and they've got 7 ideas right away within the first second. I'll tell you what you should do next time. Next time you're going to, I don't ask you for advice. I mean, sometimes people ask you for advice, that's different, right? But I also know that sometimes people just want someone to listen, right? They just want someone to be there, to have a connection. And that's really empowering. When you can have the courage to share with someone and the person just listens, but really listens and empathizes, that's all you need. Advice is stage 2. Now, we should seek advice, because advice is a good thing, but we should seek it when we're ready and we should ask for it, right? Why should we seek advice? Because we don't need to define ourselves by our failure. This is part of growth. We don't need to define ourselves by our failure, but at the same time, we need to learn from our mistakes and take responsibility. So yes, and I'm sure she did this. I'm sure that the next day, when she's feeling better, she says, now, what actually went wrong yesterday? Like, how can I make sure it doesn't happen again? Or how can I minimize it? And that's good. And at that stage, we have a verse in the Tanakh that says, Chu'a berov yu'etz. Right? Putting a bunch of heads together is good. So then that's another stage of friendship. Another stage of connection when I say, you know what, what do you think? Like, let me bounce this off you. But it's two different stages. Sometimes when we just need connection, it's not about advice, it's just about connection. And that's really important. So that's the sort of basis of courage. So I guess the point is this. The point is that being vulnerable means to be wholehearted. Wholehearted means that first of all, we need to accept the whole of ourselves. We explain what that means. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm enough, but it means that I'm worthy. I'm worthy of love. I'm worthy of acceptance. I'm worthy of connection. And I'm a worthy human being. And that's got to do with digging deep. Digging deep in the Jewish sense means understanding our real essence, our real core spark of our soul, who we really are. And understanding that whether I'm messed up or not, whether I'm going to finish or not, whether I'm going to accomplish or not, I'm still a worthy person. I have a mission, I have a purpose, I have a meaning. And I'm going to keep trying and I'm going to keep pushing. That's fine. That's step one. Step two is the courage then to build connection and to use that acceptance of wholeheartedness to share with others and to be vulnerable with others, but at the right time and with the right person. Because I guess the point we're trying to make today, and I hope it's clear, is that step one of vulnerability is accepting our own vulnerability. Step two is sharing that with someone who will create the compassion and connection rather than judge our vulnerability. So you have to know the right person and the right time to share it with. Okay, just two things before we wrap up. First is just to remind everyone that we are in raffle mode. I know some of you already took care of it, but if you can, it's our major fundraiser for the year, so please see the office. Secondly, it's Elna's Hebrew birthday today. So I'm not sure what number, like 23 or something, right? But it's a Hebrew birthday, especially in Jewish tradition, is a very, very special thing. It's a special day, a special energy, and a day of blessing. So I want to wish Elna, first of all, lange gesunte Jahren. That's it, gesundet und 20, and beyond. And only good things, and gesund, and strength. And only good things. A big mazel tov. And while we're on the subject, it's also Mrs. Letterman's Hebrew birthday today. So two special people have a birthday on the same day. So we have a birthday cake and we want everyone to enjoy. We have a birthday cake for you. You need it. So happy birthday, Elna, and please, everyone, have a piece of cake.